Hello, everybody, and welcome to Turning Towards Life. We are Lizzie and Justin from Third Space. We're here again for our 290-somethingth week of this conversation, and I'm feeling extraordinarily, ridiculously giddy with joy doing this afternoon with you, Lizzie, and welcoming everybody who's with us. I need to say that my giddiness and my joyfulness comes at least in part because we are completing another year of our professional coaching course this weekend. We're in the middle of a sort of a pause while also our wonderful students who are now graduates are in a big and very joyful completion exercise. And so we have some time at the unusual time of mid-afternoon instead of the morning to have this conversation. And my joy is at, I think, the possibility of being of deep service in the world, which I know the program is, Lizzie, and I know that this conversation is in all kinds of ways, first to us and then to many. So thank you to you for bringing an amazing source, and thank you everybody who makes this matter for being with us. I'm very grateful that you're here.
Thanks, Justin. I also am kind of brimming with joyfulness and... yeah, it's hard to say why in a way, because it feels so big and so wide. But it's just been such an amazingly joyful completion time. And here we are with that energy in Turning Towards Life. And this is such a precious space. So we have this source today by the incredible Judi Dench. Who knew that there was something written by Judi Dench that we could have access to? And sometimes we say thank you to the poet and then email them and tell them what we've done. I'm not sure Judi will read our email, Justin, but maybe we could try.
We'll give it a try.
But I want to appreciate Judi for being a person who says this. And every time I see her in any kind of interview, she's so real. And I really appreciate her as a human, the little that I know of her. And so it's a real joy to bring this from slightly left field. It just really moved me, given what the world is like today and the kind of soup we're swimming in, to read this and to feel hope from it. So here we go. This is by the wonderful Judi Dench, who is a British actor, if somebody might not know her. So she says, "Don't prioritize your looks, my friend, as they won't last the journey. Your sense of humor, though, will only get better with age. Your intuition will grow and expand like a majestic cloak of wisdom. Your ability to choose your battles will be fine-tuned to perfection. Your capacity for stillness, for living in the moment, will blossom. Your desire to live each and every moment will transcend all other wants. Your instinct for knowing what and who is worth your time will grow and flourish like ivy on a castle wall. Don't prioritize your looks, my friend. They will change forevermore. That pursuit is one of much sadness and disappointment. Prioritize the uniqueness that makes you you and the invisible magnet that draws in other like-minded souls to dance in your orbit. These are the things which will only get better."
Oh, I'm feeling very grateful for this afternoon. Don't prioritize your looks, my friend, as they won't last the journey. Your sense of humor, though, will only get better with age. Your intuition will grow and expand like a majestic cloak of wisdom. Your ability to choose your battles will be fine-tuned to perfection. Your capacity for stillness, for living in the moment, will blossom. Your desire to live each and every moment will transcend all other wants. Your instinct for knowing what and who is worth your time will grow and flourish like ivy on a castle wall. Don't prioritize your looks, my friend. They will change forevermore. That pursuit is one of much sadness and disappointment. Prioritize the uniqueness that makes you you, and the invisible magnet that draws in other like-minded souls to dance in your orbit. These are the things which will only get better.
Thank you, Justin. So I feel like this is like the antidote to every advert I've ever seen or every magazine I've ever had the misfortune to read. And I feel so grateful that there is this way of seeing and ordinarily speaking about what it's like to be human, and just this constant focus. And I think social media is a big old situation when it comes to this prioritizing our looks, which I also take as, well, the look, like our body image, you know, what we think of our bodies and what we think other people think of them, and what we look like and what our hair's like and what our faces are like and what our size is like and what our shape is like and the things we wear. And of course, all of that has a place, but it seems to me like it's got so big a place. And some ways it feels like it's getting bigger. And the more I feel into myself and do this thing that Judy invites us to, of prioritizing the uniqueness that makes me me, the more kind of liberated to just be whatever I want to be in a given day, the more I feel that, the less concerned I feel about what everything looks like. And it's such a blessed relief to not have that pressure. And the other day, Justin, someone, and maybe I read this kind of at the same time, but I have this thing where if I find people's doppelgangers, like somebody who really looks like them, I always like to tell them, because I think it's really excellent that there are humans who look like each other in the world and they don't know yet until you say, oh, look, I found your doppelganger, whatever. And there could be like an ordinary person, like a neighbor or a person that is in a film that I've seen or something. And I did it with someone the other day. And I told this person that they look like Sam Claflin out of Daisy Jones and the Six, which we've just watched, which I really loved. And anyway, so I said that. And obviously, yeah, Sam Claflin is just this incredible actor. And anyway, looked like this person, this friend of mine. And then he said, oh, I've got your doppelganger. And he showed me a picture of a woman who, once upon a time, I would have been like, oh my goodness. But I saw her and I thought, I'm just going to feel into what it is that you feel about me and what it is that you feel about this woman. And I'm going to accept whatever it is that this generosity is from you to me, rather than be mortally offended that that's what you think I look like. And I could tell there's like an old me that would have gone, oh my gosh, if that's what I look like in the world, like I'm done for or something. And I didn't do it. I just received it for the goodness. And he said, look at her eyes and look at her smile and look at what she's beaming. And he said, that's how I feel when I'm with you. And so he was just being really generous. But I could feel this part that's very, very quiet these days, that wasn't quiet before, which is also the part of me that would like not like myself in a photograph or see a picture of me and kind of list out all the ways that I looked weird or wonky or overweight or a shape I didn't really like, or I wonder what people would think of seeing that picture of me and, oh, it doesn't really look like me, all of this stuff. And in that moment, I thought, oh my gosh, I don't have that anymore. I feel like, it's there as like a shard, but it doesn't feel like, I didn't feel an ounce of woundedness. It was like a little path that was available for me to go down. And I just didn't, it wasn't compelling and I didn't take it. And I just stayed with the generosity and the intention. And it was all okay. And I think this thing then appeared to me, this piece of Judi Dench's wisdom. And I thought, yes, all of this stuff, especially this invisible magnet that draws in other like-minded souls to dance in your orbit. I mean, the value of that in my life is like profound. Having you to sit with on a Sunday morning and do teaching with and hosting excellent conversations and finding meaningfulness. And I just feel like there's such excellent things to be concerned with in the world. And what I look like to other people just seems to be diminishing. And I'm really, really bloody glad about that.
It's so good hearing you say all of this, Lizzie. And I was, I love this piece. It's extraordinary and true. And I got thinking about how, I got wondering as you were reading, how is it that we ended up in a culture that is so upside down and back to front about what's true? What is that?
Mm-hmm.
If you live, may we all get to live long and well. There are going to be losses along the way, and one of the most immediate losses is our bodies are going to change. It is inevitable. So how is it that we live in a culture that has its wisdom so back to front that we're prepared to ruin our lives by pursuing the path of sadness and disappointment in order to look a particular way and compare ourselves all the time? And where I got to in thinking about it was, there's no money to be made in us feeling okay about ourselves. And given that one of the inevitable losses is the loss of youth, it suits the meta narratives, the big stories of our culture, the ones that don't help us but keep the economy going in a particular way and all of that. It suits them to paint, to very, very consciously paint aging as a problem to be solved. And if I can feel that my looks are going and that I have to do something about it rather than ripening into the splendor of being an older person with all of the gifts that Judi Dench talks about here, if I feel like it's a problem to be solved, then you can sell me things. But you can only sell me things as long as I'm prepared to live in the midst of feeling bereft and comparative. And youth, of course, is the thing. It would be no point in that meta-narrative, that story, there would be no point celebrating aging, because aging happens without anybody selling you anything. It's going to happen anyway. So the worship of youth isn't in our service, and the worship of looks is not in our service. But it's the thing that I was really feeling reading this is that it's easy to think that this is a personal thing. Oh, I feel so terrible about it, and I need to do so. It's not personal. We got given this. Mm-hmm. We got taught this, and then we teach it. Unless we're onto it, we teach it to other people. It's systemic. So that's the background to it. But then I also just think that she's right. I mean, I just think very, very straightforwardly, very straightforwardly, wouldn't it help us a lot? As you described this opening in yourself, wouldn't it help us a lot to go, my body will change. My body's changing all the time. And yes, I can take care of myself. And yes, I can, if I have the means and the capacity to do it, I could dress with grace and I could, you know, or flair or joy or creativity or, you know, whatever. I could do all of those things, but none of them are, if none of them are a corrective to the losses of aging, but a sort of an accompanying of ourselves as we age, then they can be joyful endeavors. They can be a kind of spirited living. And it's actually a tragedy that we ought to do something about, having this conversation, that we don't learn that our intuition will expand like a majestic cloak of wisdom, and that we will finally get free of the dilemmas about who and what is worth our time. It will become clear, and then we'll do that, and it won't be a problem to say no, and we won't be worried about what people think of us so much. And that if we attend to it, I loved this line. It was, I think this is where my thinking about the whole, the stories that create lack that then sell us things. What it is to desire to live, and that to transcend, to live in this moment of my life, and that to transcend all the other more trivial ones, because it's actually the most immediately available to us, should we choose to take it, is every moment is the one that's here. You don't have to reach for something to have this moment. So I feel like in reading it, I feel the joy of my own unfolding into parts, in some places, lots of this that Judy's talking about. But I also feel, Lizzie, my sadness and my rage that we have created and that we perpetuate a culture which keeps on telling us the opposite of the thing that's most true and that we most need.
Also, Justin, I'm having a bit of an epiphany while you're talking, because when you said if there's no problem to be solved, there's no problem to be solved, there's nothing that can be sold to solve the problem, like as in there's a commercial situation with problem solving, I suddenly connected the fact that because we're in an environment all the time, in a system, as you said, that is somehow operating at the level of problem solving, we don't just create businesses to solve problems and say, well, I'm going to make this to solve the problem of this, and therefore it's worth something, which like hundreds and thousands of millions of businesses are built on, and many of which excellent. But some of those problems aren't even real problems. They're the problems that got created by this dynamic. But then the weird thing is because that system is so prevalent and powerful, we then treat each other as if we're problems to be solved. And you're not a business proposition. You're a human. And I think it happens so much that we get our problem-solving hats on, because that's the soup we're swimming in when we're faced with a human dilemma, whether it's our own or another's. And then we try and fix it. And it's just very different. And of course, there's some things like your button is broken. Oh, I can solve that problem because your shirt won't do up. I can sew your button on. How wonderful if I can solve that problem in that way. But when you come to me in grief or confusion or shame or terror, or goodness knows what other humanness you might come to me with, if I try and solve that and fix that, you know that that's not what you need. And so it's, in some ways, I'm just thinking of the difference between how, well, I know that anyway, it's sweet for myself. If you try and fix me and I'm coming to you with like an emotional something, I'm really just like, not what I need, not what I want. I need you to listen to me. I need you to hold me. I need you to maybe offer me some wisdom, but I don't need you to fix me. I just need you to be with me and to like be alongside while I work my way through something and feel my way through and process something. And I also know that there's a way that I don't know that about the things I'm being sold. Like, I don't know that well enough that my Instagram feed is trying to solve a problem that it's not perceiving in me, but is expecting to be there in me, because otherwise I wouldn't be served the things I'm being served or whatever. So there's a way that I'm inherently subject to something that's really, really hard to see unless I'm onto my own sense of deficiency and my own sense of lack, and how that might be filled by the things that I'm being offered all the time by magazines, television, the news, Instagram feeds, all of the stuff. And so I feel like all the more in this moment, I'm feeling the importance of my inherent sense of abundance and goodness and erupting joyful life force, like we were talking about at the beginning of this conversation. If that can be my orientation to life, I am not a set of problems to be solved. And so then I can feel all this possibility open up. What does get served to me in life then? What will I accept? What will I open up to? What will come my way if I'm not this set of hooks for the problem solvers to hang themselves on? And if I'm something entirely different to that, what becomes possible?
I'm so excited by what you're saying, Lizzie. So the vital importance of finding ways to discover, uncover, and reaffirm our own inherent goodness and completeness is one step in addressing this. And doing the same in our relationship with others. Because the extent to which, the extent to which we continue to live in an understanding of ourselves as one of absence and lack that needs to be fixed, keeps us invulnerable too.
Yeah.
The Instagram algorithms and algorithms all over the place that are constructed to bring advertisers into your orbit and for you to want to buy their products. So it's not only are the stories of our culture the ones we're talking about, they're also encoded in these days in products and software that will tailor to you just the thing that will keep you right in that. And we participate in that. So many of us participating in it willingly and unknowingly, like you said. But I also got thinking whilst you were talking about it, that wouldn't it be an amazing world where all the effort to make businesses went into problems that really needed to be solved rather than inventing problems? Because there are enough problems to solve and lots of people working on them, but there's a lot that isn't that. And I also got into feeling the ways in which I have, this is subtle to try and say this, but when I've been caught, as I have been, in the very thing that Judi Dench is trying to tell us about, caught in angst about aging, looking at my face and seeing how it's different at 53 from 43 and 33, and, you know, catching myself in a photo, and I can end up doing that to other people because I'm doing it to myself. Mm-hmm. So look at somebody I love and make them into a product that needs to be fixed. I can't deal with their aging because I can't deal with my aging. I can't deal that they don't look like they did when I first met them because I can't deal with a sense of lack in myself. Mm-hmm. And by the extension of that, all the ways in which we turn what we won't deal with in ourselves as problems to be fixed in other people.
Yeah.
So this way, the way that Judi Dench is inviting us into, really is a kind of, seems to me, is a kind of celebration of what is. Like, what if we could celebrate the unfolding of a human life without labeling it as, without labeling the losses that are inevitable as something to be done something about, and celebrating the changes that don't fit into the narrative of whatever there is to be fixed and solved? Can we learn to celebrate them? It wouldn't just be for us, because it would also mean that we could celebrate one another, and we wouldn't bring so much suffering on one another from our turning away, or you don't suit me anymore, Lizzie, as a friend or as a partner or as a teacher or as whatever, because you changed, you aged, or whatever else it is, or the things about you that don't change but which I label as a thing to be fixed anyway that are just you. We would stop doing that and we would celebrate one another.
Yeah.
And what gifts would become available to the world from our celebrating one another. Like, it seems to me that this is at the root of an enormous, like an unimaginable weight of human suffering is caught up in how we respond to this kind of question.
Yeah. Justin, I was just thinking of all the ways, like if I get hypnotized into, and I consider myself to have been hypnotized into, but I'm seeing now what's happening. If I get hypnotized into a certain kind of shape, look, image of a human being that we should be, and I take that on myself and become somehow in relationship to that, whether I'm completely anti it or whether I completely conform to it or I'm doing my best to become the thing that I need to become in order to qualify in those things, it feels in this moment completely impossible not to do that to everybody around me. Even if I'm silent about it and I don't say anything, it's still really pervasive if I don't do what I can do, like in this conversation, to undo my being subject to all those implicit rules by all of the imagery that we see. And so I'm just seeing the link between, like, I can't stop judging someone else for something that I haven't stopped judging in myself. And so having my own journey from I do this because I want a certain image to I do this because it brings me joy or because it's life-giving, or I can't remember what you said, something to do with spirit, like spirited living, like for reasons of spiritedness rather than an aliveness, rather than this is what I should be doing, this is what my body should look like, or what, you know, if I had this image, this physical image, everything would be okay or something. Because also if that's my narrative on the inside, I might be really earnestly trying to save people from something. I might be trying to save you, Justin, from the terribleness of looking bad by telling you that you need to change. And when you love me and I do that to you, that's really powerful. Even when you don't love me, it's really powerful. But I'm just seeing that if I can't get a hold of that myself and look at all the ways I've been conditioned to think bodies, people should be a certain look, shape, way, there's no way I can really do what you were suggesting, which is to celebrate somebody as they are in whatever their isness is right now, whatever their flesh looks and feels and is like, or whatever their way they dress, or there's like, it's impossible for me to appreciate if I haven't got onto this thing. And when you say it, like you say it as a systemic thing that's possible to see and to not treat it as so personal, I feel there's so much possibility in that. So I want to really thank you for bringing, you always bring that thing. And I think it's one of the things I'm learning more and more to find my way into, that, you know, yes, there might be stuff that's personal, but even when it's personal, it came from somewhere else that was part of a system. So to see it in a systemic way is really healing and helpful. So thank you. Oh my gosh. Thank you for your openness, Justin. Thank you for, this is a kind of different kind of source that we've brought before. And I really appreciate your willingness and openness. And I want to thank Judy Dench again for being one who says this to us, to the world. And we're going to be back next week with a source chosen by you, Justin. And just thank you, everybody, for being with us. And thank you, Justin, for always turning up and being open and ready and willing.
Such a joy. Thank you, Lizzie. Thank you, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.